Where do we start this? An answer doesn't matter. We're having a good time. Right.
He couldn't wait to get in here.
You need sales balls to make sales calls. Sure. I'm tweeting that puppy. Okay.
The music's so cool, it almost makes you want to listen, or actually makes you not want the music to stop. My name is Jeffrey Gittimer. You may know me as the author of The Sales Bible or The Little Red Book of Selling, greatest selling sales book of all time. And I'm here with the lovely, talented, fabulous
Jen Gluckow. Hi, Jeffrey. Hi, everyone out there listening. I'm Jen Gluckow. I'm the author of Jen's Top 10 for Sales Zen and also the founder of Sales in a New York Minute.
And across from me is, I'm going to let him introduce himself. Doug, who are you?
I am the producer of this wonderful podcast, the Sell or Die podcast. So you guys have renamed this podcast. Why is that?
Because you either sell or you die. If you come in second place in sales, you have officially lost. And the most interesting thing is you go back to your boss and go, well, we almost got one. Like, seriously? No, dude. You freaking lost.
That's right. You either win the deal or you don't.
Right. You either win the sale and get a commission or you get jack shit. Those are your two.
Are we allowed to say shit on the podcast?
Well, we just did. We've got the explicit tag, so we're good.
Sell or die, I don't want to make fun of it. What I want to do is I want to be real about it. Mm-hmm. You as a salesperson, if you cannot make that sale, number one, you take responsibility for it the same way you take responsibility for your health. I'm not going to come to your house every day and give you vitamins. You got to take your own vitamins. And sell or die means you are responsible to revive yourself. You're responsible to live the life of a successful salesperson.
And also, it's the attitude that you should have as a successful salesperson is that you are either going to sell or die in whatever industry that you're in. In New York, you'll be packing your bags in a New York minute and packing up your desk in a New York minute if you're not making sales.
There's two things that I actually understand about sales. No one has ever come to me in my 25 years of doing this and said, Jeffrey, I didn't make the sale and it's all my fault. They blame
everyone.
Oh, yeah. And they don't get the fact that if they would, and this is number two, take responsibility for what they've done and to figure out why they lost the sale, then they may not lose the next one.
And once you're dead, it doesn't matter who's to blame.
Exactly.
That guy was a really bad driver. Yeah, he hit me with his car. Well, I'm dead. It doesn't matter.
Right, exactly. The other thing is, while I'm on this soapbox tirade, there's books written about the complex sale. And the complex sale to me means the seller, the guy who's representing the company for $1 million or $500,000, can't get to the CEO. The CEO uncomplexes a hell of a lot of sales by liking you and naming you as the vendor. And then all the people underneath that are sitting around a table trying to figure out what's what, they have no choice. The CEO said, pick this guy.
So what you're saying is it's not so complex if you have a relationship with the right people.
The complex sale, that's correct. The complex sale is find and befriend the CEO. So it's a five-word deal instead of a 500-page book. All the bullshit that's in the book means jack shit. If you just get to the CEO and you're the choice, done.
You talk about that in your webinars.
All the time.
Tell us a little bit about the webinars you have coming up.
We have created a series of webinars called Gittimer Gold. And the Gittimer Gold won't just be webinars. It'll be other stuff that appears over the course of this year and next, maybe even the year after that, depending upon how the brand really catches. Right now, in 2016, we have dubbed this year of the sale. And I've already recorded two of them. I've created 13 webinars that will touch on pretty much everything that a salesperson needs to be able to get from a social platform or a cold calling process or closing the sale or being better at LinkedIn. All the things that the salesperson needs right this minute. Be able to listen for 45 minutes, get actively involved by asking questions and answers and, you know, getting involved with that part of the process, and then being able to review them all year long.
So it's a live Q&A?
Yeah, live Q&A.
And what did we say about gold? I don't even know if we've told you this yet, but gold on the periodic table of elements is AU.
Which is all about you.
I love that.
Yeah, it's good. We figured you would because you're kind of girly.
I am kind of girly.
But that's Gittimer Gold. It's all about you.
Gittimer Gold is all you, all the time. All you, all the time. And the higher percentage it is, the more it's worth. So you got the 18 karat gold or 10 karat gold, that ain't worth shit. But 24 karat gold, baby, that's it.
So jeffreygittimer.com/gold
jeffreygittimer.com/gold will get you to the little video that I created about it. And then you have to take one more action, click and buy.
Awesome. So it's time for our first subject on the Sell or Die podcast, and it's a little bit of breaking news.
Oh, my God. Production. If you're listening to this and you're hearing all the noise in the background, get used to it because it's going to keep on happening.
And it's freaking awesome.
We're trying to blend sales and whatever the process is with a little bit of excitement so that you can get out from behind the wheel and, you know, dance a little bit or get to your next sales call and feel good about it, feel more confident about it. I listened to cassette tapes when I was driving in my car, and I listened to Dennis Waitley. I even listened to Zig Ziglar. I listened to Earl Nightingale. And those things were the enlightenment to me that got me thinking about what I needed to say when I arrived. And what we're going to try to do is give you stuff to say in today's world about what to do, how to act, how to react after you've arrived. Because you're out there making that sales call. You're banging your head up against the wall. Somebody may say to you, we're not interested. Dude, take responsibility. You are not interesting. There's something to think about. But for today, we're not going to talk about whether you're interesting or not. We're going to talk about new things that are happening.
Some kind of breaking news.
Right, some kind of breaking news. So it came out last week, and it's all about Twitter. There are some Twitter changes on the horizon.
Oh, wait a second.
Yeah?
No, let me give you the breaking news. The person who's listening to this blows at Twitter. They have 9 followers. They don't understand the process. They go home, they drink a beer, and they watch TV when they could be learning about Twitter and what it's about so that the other 300 million people that they interact with, some of which could be your customers, might actually be attracted to you, want to connect with you, and follow you.
All right. So what's the Twitter news?
All right. So when you tweet, you can tweet 140 characters.
Right.
And they're thinking about or talking about changing that character limit to 10,000 characters.
Wow. Yeah, that'll keep me awake.
Yeah.
And that's going to affect us. I use Twitter all the time. I tweet 5 to 10 times a day. I get retweets. So do you. Mm-hmm. And now we have to rethink our Twitter strategy.
Yeah, well, as soon as they announce what it is, we're trying to tell you that the social world is going to change at the drop of a hat. If you're on LinkedIn, you've seen 20 changes in the last year.
Oh, more.
The way they format.
20 changes in the last month.
The way they post, the way they notify people. Everything has changed on the way you accept people, the way you request people. They're trying to make it simple for you to build a following, to build a foundation, to build a base in your domain. I don't want to use the word tribe because Godin has used it to death. But I think that what you have to do is look at the people who you can influence or who have influenced you. And most people have a bunch of LinkedIn followers or LinkedIn connections and don't do anything with them.
Yeah, but LinkedIn could be a real sales driver and a pipeline creator for you.
And you could get people from your Twitter to follow you on LinkedIn by simply putting a link.
Right, and offering value. They're only going to want to follow you in other places if you're offering things that they find valuable.
Right, so I post an article, and then I tweet the fact that I've just posted an article on LinkedIn, and people will go there and retweet it, and people will go and read it, like it, comment on it.
Yeah, and the cool thing is when they comment, you respond to them. So they're actually getting to interact with you.
It's for free.
Right.
And joining us today is the great Josh Coffey. Josh is a Twitter expert. He has formed a company called Flight Media, where he helps people predominantly in Twitter and Instagram, but can also do other forms of social media. He helps people create attraction. He helps get followers that are legitimate. And he helps people interact with one another where the end result is more sales.
And I'm one of the lucky people who work with Josh and his company, and they manage all of my social media and digital strategy. And Josh, you guys are doing a real great job.
Cool. Thank you. I'm glad.
I think I had about 500 Twitter followers when you started working with me. What am I at now?
I don't know. I think last was 15,000. Yeah. I haven't checked in a while.
And so. I just passed 4,000 Instagram followers.
Oh, yeah.
So that was a big number for me. I think I should follow you on Instagram. Huh?
How do people follow you on Instagram?
You just go to at Jeffrey Gittimer. Oh, okay. Yeah. But I am about to break 100,000 Twitter followers, which is a pretty big number. 100,000 legitimate Twitter followers. I think that's an important thing to say. And I tweet a bunch, but Josh has taught me what else to tweet besides my own thoughts. And I think that's an imperative. Anyone looking for a Twitter strategy, you have to have what to tweet and when to tweet it in order to be able to attract the right kind of people.
Josh, tell us a little bit about your strategy.
So at Fight Media, we implement what we call the four pillars of social media. And just real briefly, kind of how we approach it is with intention. A lot of people think they can just get on social media, or they hear they should get on it. So they kind of hop on, or they get a little excited because everyone's telling them they should. They open like 16 different accounts, and they get burnt out because they don't know what to do, what to post, when to do it, how to grow followers. So we kind of boil it down to four pillars is what we call them. And the first one is growth, where we go out and we intentionally connect with relevant people to build relationships and grow an audience. Then we post to them at the right time and the right stuff. Then the third step is we engage with them to actually build relationships, which is the whole reason for social networking, is to actually network and talk with people. And then we run reports to adapt our strategy accordingly. So that's kind of the four pillars of how we go about doing that.
Cool.
In a 5-minute speech.
Yeah, okay.
Spiel. So let's get deeper into it. You know, the rumor is that Twitter is going to be changing and evolving to allow people to tweet all kinds of stuff. They're going to go from 140 characters to, I think, a million characters, right? What's the rumor there?
So Twitter's looking to, as of right now, they're looking, and this is early 2016, they're looking to go from 140 to 10,000 character limit. They're learning that, or they're trying to adapt because recently, if you're listening to this, looking at close proximity of when things have happened, Twitter is a company is losing some engagement with their users. And so what they're doing is they're making different changes here and there to try and improve the user experience to maintain that engagement and growth of their users. Like they just recently came out with They just came out with what's called a moments tab on your Twitter. So now you can look at moments. So it's almost like trending.
One of the moments was watching the ball drop in New York on New Year's.
Yeah. And they do live moments and things. And so that's the new thing. It's kind of like trends. And what's happening now?
But doesn't
so they're
10,
doing that,
000,
and
doesn't,
now they're looking to expand it.
Doesn't 10,000 characters seem like a heck of a jump? Like, I don't want to read all that crap. If I want to read all that crap, I can go on LinkedIn or I can go on other social media. The reason I like Twitter is because it's short and sweet.
Exactly. It's
yeah,
snappy.
So that's exactly how I feel. I mean, the problem is 140 characters is what makes Twitter Twitter. It's one of the mm-hmm. largest differentiators. It's like a tweet. It's like a chirp. They're real fast, right?
Where did Where did it originally come from? Just 100. How did they choose 140 characters?
So don't quote me on this because someone's going to come back and tell me it's incorrect, and I feel bad because I'm the Twitter guy. But in Jack Dorsey's book, at least the book about the whole situation, Twitter starting up. When I was reading it. From what I remember, and it's been a few years, is that when they were developing Twitter, they wanted something that was different, something that was just fast, instant thoughts, and just like a tweet is fast. It's not like tweet, like, you know, like birds don't just tweet one long tweet. And so I think that that's kind of how they came about it. Someone's going to correct me and say that it's maybe a little bit different, but that's from how I remember them wanting to do it, a shorter amount of characters.
I can tell you this, that the more they expand 140 characters, the less I'm going to read and the less I'm going to be involved. That's just me personally. And maybe I'm a nobody, but I got 100,000 followers, so at least I have somewhat of a voice.
So I don't know if this is any correct at all, but Google is telling me that the 140 character limit is based on text message limit, leaving characters 20 characters for a username.
Well, I think the whole deal is the fact that most people don't even know how to use what they have right now. I don't think that there's any form of, if you look at a lot of people who either follow me or tweet me, I'll click on them and they have 16 followers and they're following 298 people and they've tweeted 421 times and there's been no connection. How's 10,000 characters going to help that person?
So there is a flip side to this, and I love Twitter. I'm a huge fan of it. I have a course on it. The only thing that I think is the 140 characters makes Twitter Twitter. Now, the only thing about that and why maybe engagement is going down is that in 140 characters is pretty tough to offer extreme value. And now it used to be on social media back when they started.
But they
it,
have believe, links. They have you can click to a
stuff.
Link.
You exactly. Can, you can link out and then you're getting more than 140 characters.
Yes. So when Twitter first started, and you can, and I do that all the time, and I preach, you got to do that because it's all you can do. It's primarily Twitter's great for posting links, quotes, and that's primarily it. I mean, you speak your thoughts definitely on there and start conversations. I think the thing that they might be going after is the fact that back when they started, most people you could promote your business and just spam all these links, and it was okay, and you'd actually do pretty well doing that. Now it's completely changed to where you have to add more value to things and really incentivize people because now you're competing with all these other people who are posting a lot of links and a lot of very short content to send you back to their websites and to their blogs and their
so
different
in other words,
podcasts,
Twitter is now becoming a politician. Their favorite color is plaid. Whatever anybody else is going to do, we're going to do that too. I think
So I think that they're doing it. They're trying to adapt is definitely what I'm gathering. Whether it's going to work or not, I don't know.
I think it's just one of their last attempts. I think they're going
to
change it from Twitter to shitter. I don't think it's going to work very well, and I think that they're going to shit all over themselves just in terms of trying to capture a market that they haven't even captured themselves yet in their 140 space. I think it's going to be clickier to read more.
Yeah, it'll definitely be clickier to read more. But at that point, you have a blog. Send them to your blog, and they can read all they want. 10,000 characters there, 10,000 words. So I think that it's wise of Twitter to start exploring options and see how people react to different rollouts. The truth is, Twitter's trying to increase their engagement so their user base continues to grow and it continues to be an effective platform worth being on. MySpace, for example, didn't try. They thought that we are the best out there and we have music and we have groups and we have our little everyone can add friends and that's all you're ever going to need. Well, unfortunately, Facebook came and just kind of drop kicked them and MySpace has died out. I think Twitter's at least making
attempts. Does MySpace still exist?
Funny, I was in a conversation the other day about MySpace. It does exist, but it's essentially worth nothing right now. Not many people use it.
Went from a typical in the .com world, they went from hero to zero in about a year.
Yep.
I mean, it's
sort
of like BlackBerry.
They're wiped off.
Right. It's like BlackBerry.
Exactly.
Zero.
Yeah.
Exactly. And I think that Twitter is at least trying to improve it so that way their user experience increases and then their engagement increases and people continue using it. Now, while I think that 140 characters, it's what makes Twitter Twitter, and I really personally would prefer that. If they do come out with a way to engage more users, and they'll have the exact numbers behind this, but once they find out what is really working and people are engaging with, I honestly think that if that was a solution, now right now I don't think it's the solution, but if that was the solution, then it would ultimately benefit us because then we just adapt, and if we're doing it right, we're going to have more engaged people, more engaged traffic, and more business.
The interesting thing
so
is
I at least admire their thoughts.
Yeah, the interesting thing is it changes every expert's opinion, and everyone's going to have to regroup, relearn, and then figure out new ways to communicate how to best take advantage of it. So it will spawn an entire either upgrade of an industry or a new industry about how the old guys at new Twitter, now that they don't know jack shit, and the new people, boy, they know everything because here's how to make money on the 10,000 characters. Here's how to monopolize, characterize, click here to find out and buy now.
Yeah, I mean, Josh, you have a course on Twitter. You'd have to change your course, right?
I'll change my course. I'll just swap a couple of videos in there, but it wouldn't be too much.
Tell us about that course.
How do I get that course? I want it right now.
You already have it, Jeffrey.
You'd already have it. But hey, for anyone listening, if you want to check it out, you can go to flightmedia.co/Twitter-course. So flightmedia.co/Twitter-course. Enter the code Jeffrey. We'll give you $100 off. How's that sound?
Cool. That sounds good.
Sweet.
It is. Let me share with you, if you're listening to this, obviously you can hear it. The course is real. The course works. We are Josh Coffey disciples. We get exactly what he's trying to do. We have added thousands of followers as a result of his advice, and so should you.
Yeah, the course is, it's engaging. It's fun. It's easy to use. If you follow it, you're going to rock on Twitter.
Yep.
So, Josh, I have a question for you. Jeffrey was talking earlier about all these people who use Twitter who have, 16 followers. They're posting tons of stuff. They have 400 posts and they're following tons of people, but they have virtually no followers. What are they doing wrong? How could someone who's either trying to grow their Twitter base or new to Twitter, how can they take advantage of it to make sales? Because that's what this is all about, selling.
Yeah, so there are going to be a lot of variables. First of all, they're doing it wrong and they're trying to grow the followers. Either they're posting wrong, irrelevant things at bad times. If they have a name that is very hard to pronounce, or they have a bad profile picture, or have no profile picture and have the stock little egg, the chances of someone actually following you and wanting to engage with you is slim to nothing.
What about just trying to build a name and get recognition? And some of the people that do this try to engage everybody in a conversation, and they're, well, thanks for that, and thanks for this, and let's do this. Is it really for conversation like that, or is it more for announcement and thought process?
It's for both. And that was the second thing I'm going to say. So first of all, they're just posting. Their profile may not look good, but then they're just vomiting content out there. They're just posting. Mm. Like you said, some people, I've seen people with 50,000 tweets and they have 10,000 followers. There's no way. That's one follower per, 500 tweets or whatever that difference is.
I can define those people, Josh. They have no life.
Go ahead. Exactly. Or they have them hooked up to what's called an RSS feed, and it'll just auto post things whenever someone posts a blog.
Got you.
That's what a lot of people will do. And so they're spewing content, but there's no real engagement. And the thing is, people forget that social media is for networking. Social media, social networking, that's what they call it. And it's for networking and relationships, and people forget that engagement piece.
Actually,
and I think that's where the issue really is.
It's interesting because we met on Twitter.
We did.
It works. I was searching. People do forget about the networking piece. I was searching for someone to help me with my Twitter, and I went on Twitter and searched for Twitter experts, and you came up. And I read through some of your tweets and they were pretty good. And I said, this guy might be an expert. I'm not sure. I'm from New York, so New Yorkers don't really trust immediately. And I decided to Google you because that's the next thing that people do after they go on Twitter, right? So I Googled you and went to your website. And all of a sudden, you had tons of content on your website that I couldn't put down. I was reading and reading and reading. And I got to a point where I read your bio, because now I'm like becoming your professional stalker. And and I decided, you know what? There's a button here. Click more to learn more. And you responded right away. So it was the beginning of our relationship, or even friendship, you might say, was me finding you on Twitter, finding you credible, continuing to search your reputation, going to your website, reading your content, finding you to have a really great reputation, and then you responding immediately. That was killer. We set up a call within like a day, didn't we?
I love it. Exactly. It's a testimony that Twitter really does work. It's about that engagement. I remember that day. We got it. We were an email and then we were on the phone. So
exactly.
It is. It's about the engagement and the response. And most people are just, it's all outgoing. It's all outgoing. Nothing, there's no two-way street. It's always one way. And those are the people that find Twitter ineffective and really don't make it work for them.
Yeah, I think they forget the social networking part. That it's about yes. networking. And you called it like a digital handshake. What did you call it?
Yes, it's like shaking digital hands. That's essentially what you're doing.
I like that, actually.
I love that.
Yeah.
Because I had to learn how to do that. Because in Ashland, Ohio, with 20,000 people and barely anyone in our Chamber of Commerce, there's not too many hands to shake. So I had to go online.
Okay, so give me an idea. What can somebody do? They don't want to hire you because they're a bunch of cheap bastards, and even though they should. What can somebody do to improve their Twitter attraction or following? Give me some things on hashtags or requoting or retweeting people that are in their industry. What can some people do?
I think the main thing is that you need to sit down and actually develop a strategy. Now, while I can't break out into 6 hours of training here, that's what my course is for. The essential piece is you need to figure out how you're going to grow, what and when you're going to post, and when you're going to engage. Now, you are going to have to get some – the best way to really do it is you're going to have some softwares for scheduling posts so you don't have to manually do it. But in order to really make it work, you have to be consistent, and that usually doesn't happen without a game plan. So sit down. If you want to grow an audience, here's my number one advice to you. And it's always like it's a big controversial subject of growth, but most people think that they can just sit back and people will come and find them when no one knows that they're there. I take a different approach, and I like to be intentional. I go out and I follow and I retweet and I tweet and I talk to people. And by doing that, you get new followers. So you need that. That's just a 10-second growth strategy. Do that every single day. Go follow 10 people a day, and you're going to start growing. Go tweet 10 people a day, and you're going to get one of them following you back.
What you're saying is a strategy
and written plan.
Retweet somebody and then follow them?
Yeah. That's a good combination right there. You could retweet, you could follow them, or you could just tweet them in itself and ask them a question or start a conversation with them. But just by taking action, write it down and start doing it. That's the most important thing. There's a million resources. Actually, if you want more, because we blog about this really frequently, I would recommend going to blog.flightmedia.co because we're always up on what's the latest marketing trends and what you should be doing. And that's the Flight Media blog. And you'll learn anything you could imagine that I would teach on here, on there, on your own time.
Josh, one of the things I found helpful on your website when I was, I'm going to put it in quotes, but stalking you, or checking you out, your social credibility, was you have an actual list of tools that you guys use at Flight Media and tools that other people might want to use if they're getting started.
Yes. So on our blog, we have that. I don't know when you're listening to this. It will relocate to our primary website here pretty soon. But if you go to flightmedia.co, jump through some links, and you should be able to find those. And we'll break down all the softwares we recommend, servers, and all that techie stuff.
Cool. Now, I want to switch gears for a second. I was at lunch yesterday with a 26-year-old, and he mentioned that he's been on Instagram since it started and Twitter since it started and Facebook since it started. And he didn't really know much about LinkedIn and if it could help him for sales. And, you know, we talked about that. But one of the things he was voicing was a general concern and frustration that all of these social media platforms are constantly changing. What do you tell people who get frustrated by these changes?
Hire someone else to do it for you.
Yeah, I agree.
Because social media is one of the fastest changing. It's a tech industry.
Somebody has to be studying it every day to keep up with it.
Are you spending hours a day reading about it?
We don't have to spend hours a day because we have a lot of people and a full team. So by the time something rolls out, we already know about it and we know what to do. So we don't have one specific person doing it, but collectively every single week, our marketing team every Tuesday is together for an hour discussing changes in strategy and challenges and how to overcome them.
So you can Google as a listener, you can Google changes in Twitter and you can probably pop up three or four articles in a week that might direct you a little bit. But the key is to have something to tweet and to make it retweetable.
Right. And to engage.
Yep.
Yeah.
And going back to that, Jen, it's like there's so much going on that if you're to the point where you don't want to keep up with it, like you say, it's overwhelming the amount of changes. If you want to stick on it, you have to be consistent. So either outsource it or bring in a new person to your company to at least handle it.
And I'm just going to give you just an overview piece. We're coming into the elections in 2016. Stay out of politics. Stay out of things that would be perceived as controversial by any one of your customers who may be a Democrat and you're tweeting something Republican or vice versa. Or stay out of religion, regardless of what your beliefs are. I recommend you keep them to yourselves. Try to stick to things that can impact the person who's reading the tweet. And try to invite your followers to a point where they will join you so they can get your messages on a daily basis. The key is inviting, and the second key is tweeting in a way that might be valuable enough to be retweeted.
I was just going to add to that, Jeffrey. What you have to think of when you create any social network is, who is my buyer persona? Who's the person who would buy from me and become my customer? And if I have the social media is used for two things, personal or business. If you're trying to do social media for business, you can miss a little personal, but it cannot be too personal. Like posting pictures of your cat on Instagram when you know that you have a bunch of prospects and clients following you isn't going to really relate to them. And honestly, it's going to get you unfollowed. For me, I post a lot of – it's a personal Twitter or a personal Instagram. I'll give you Instagram, for example. But I post a lot of things primarily of behind the scenes of our team and what we're doing at Fight Media. That's primarily what I post. Occasionally, it'll be about me and fitness or traveling, but it's primarily business.
So, Josh, our listeners have lots to learn from you, and I think this is just the tip of the iceberg.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for joining us today. I hope you'll come back and join us again soon.
Absolutely, guys. It was a pleasure.
No, the pleasure was ours. You take care of yourself.
Just remind us, what's the website? Where can they find you if they want to learn more?
Just check out flightmedia.co or check me out on any social network at Josh Coffey, COFFY.
Thanks, Josh.
Thanks, guys. See ya.
Josh Coffey freaking rocks.
I love the guy.
Yeah.
He, as a matter of fact, is staying at our home this weekend.
He is.
And I love when he's here because I get a perspective of someone who he refers to me as Gramps, but I'm a solid 40 years older than Josh.
Is that because you're old or he's young?
Yes.
Okay.
Just
checking.
He has a perspective that I want to learn about. I'm not going to say, oh, these damn kids. I want it to these damn kids. I love these damn kids.
Exactly.
What do they have to say? What are they doing? How's it working?
Tell us more.
Exactly. And he makes sales because people call him to buy. And
That would be interesting to find out how many times he actually picks up the phone to make a cold call or a prospecting call.
None.
Versus how many times his Twitter creates inbound attraction for him. We should bring him back to talk about that.
So Josh Coffey is his own anomaly. And I want to talk about another anomaly. I think that the world doesn't understand who the real helpful people are, who the guys are and the women are that are out there that can actually bring value to your business and information to your head that will fatten your wallet. And one of those guys is Jeb Blunt. Jeb Blunt founded SalesGravy.com. You spell his name Blount. It's, if you look at it, it's Blount. And
that's how I pronounced it.
Exactly. That's how I pronounced it too. So he came over about a week ago and I said, hey, Jeb, how many people mispronounce your name? And he said, only Yankees. Okay, real good. So it's Jeb Blunt. And Jeb is an expert at people who are looking for employment. And he has this job posting board called Sales Gravy that has hundreds of thousands of people. Now, number one, that's a tremendous success story. But there's a sub-message in there. There's a lot of pissed off salespeople that don't like their job, don't like their boss, don't like their product, don't like their company, don't like their customers. And maybe these people don't like life, but many of them have a legitimate reason. Mm-hmm. And a lot of it is, and if you're a sales manager, maybe their manager blows.
Maybe they're blaming their manager and maybe they're not making enough sales and not holding themselves responsible.
Listen, you can do it either way. But I'm challenging a sales manager. If you're listening and you go, oh, that's not me, that might be bullshit. If you can't go out and make a sale in front of your salesperson where that salesperson cannot make the sale, you ain't their leader, dude. If they think they're smarter than you, if your sales guys think they're smarter than their manager, they're not going to listen to one word.
So, Jeffrey, Jeb was here this week.
Yep.
And what did you guys talk about?
We talked about all kinds of stuff.
Cold calling.
Yeah.
Prospecting.
Yeah. Anybody
well,
else?
Let's take a listen.
Yeah, let's listen to one.
Oh, I thought you were guessing. Which comes first, the lead or the cold call?
That's right.
How many cold calls would you say you've made in your life, or one-time calls?
Oh, God.
Yeah, exactly.
Hundreds of thousands.
You know, I hate cold calling, and I voice myself against cold calling. But when I first came to Charlotte in 1988, I literally cold called every office in Uptown Charlotte. I'd start at the top of these big, tall buildings and bang on the doors of everybody in the hallway, go down to the next floor by the fire escape where you could walk in and out, and then go to the next one, and I was selling sales leads, which is an easiest thing. I'd walk into the gatekeeper person, I'd say, who's in charge of sales leads? And no one would know. It was like the ultimate question. And the boss would always come out. Oh, I am. Okay, great. Here's some. Yeah, I'm just giving you these for free. And if you like them, I'll come back.
So the prospecting and the puppy dog close all in the same
bingo.
Day. Right?
Yeah, bingo. The ultimate question, get the decision maker to walk out of his or her office, give him something for nothing, and walk away like I'm the Lone Ranger. You know what I mean? And I would have two business cards with me, mine and my cat, Lido. And I would say, this is my business card. If I'm not around, this is my cat's business card. She's always there. And people would – that's how I got a reputation. Well,
they would laugh.
But howl.
But that process of starting at the top of the building, going to the bottom of the building, doing that every day created momentum.
Correct. And I found out this when they have those no soliciting signs in the front door, they can only throw you out into the hallway. Or you just go to the next floor.
Well, I mean, it's similar when I was building Sells Gravy. I started – by going all around the state of Florida with a couple of flyers in my hand, and I would go to job fairs where there were a bunch of recruiters, and mm-hmm. I would hand them a flyer and say, come post your jobs on Sales Gravy, come post your jobs on Sales Gravy. And then in that case, they could throw you straight out of the convention center into the sidewalk. But and I got thrown out of a few, but
sure.
that was what I needed to create enough momentum so that some of the other things that happen, some of the serendipity that happens in sales take care of you.
If you're not willing to take no for an answer, sales is not a real good job for you.
No, and you know, and the hardest ask that you make in sales is for someone's time. It's the hardest close that you're going to have. So that
people
initial,
are busy and they may not want to talk to you.
Well, nobody wants to talk to you. That's the whole point
well,
with sales.
Yeah, nobody
right?
wants to talk no, to you.
Well, even salespeople don't like salespeople. So if you're interrupting someone's day and you think, well, they're going to want to talk to me, they're not going to want to talk to you. So you have to be engaging. And the whole
Without
deal with the question and the cat and all of that creates a situation where at least you can get their attention for a moment.
There were at least 25% of the people that I talked to, the gatekeepers or the managers, where I gave my card and my cat's card, who said, I have a cat. I got to do this. And so at least in at least 25% of the cases, I could make a link immediately with them just based on we both have a cat. Not I'm selling something. We both have a cat. Classic.
It's a simple thing.
Right? And a one-minute thing. I mean, I was in and out of an office in a minute. We're not interested. Okay. And what I learned is when people said that I'm not interested – that they were telling me, you're not interesting.
That's exactly right.
So I got better. I just want to talk to the person in charge of sales leads. What, you like have enough sales leads? I don't know. Because sometimes they're told to say we're not interested if a salesperson comes.
Well, that's the whole thing. Like if you call someone up and you ask them if they're interested, they're always not interested because you just interrupted their day.
Exactly. So and they're pissed off that you're there. We're like, who is this guy?
Yeah, that's the three B's of prospecting. Be brief, be bright, be gone. So you've got to be able to get in and get out fast. You got in and out in a minute or so.
Mm-hmm.
You've got.
But I left something behind of value. I think that's a critical piece. Not a brochure.
Of value, you left
I said here's 150 sales leads.
But you got to be bright. And look, if you're doing telephone prospecting and you're calling small business owners, a lot of salespeople do that. Part of that leaving behind is a question that I ask. I want to come by and learn about your business. The one thing that small business owners love to talk about is themselves and their business. Yeah. And so if you say, I want to learn about you versus I want to tell you about me, they're more likely to say yes. In fact, it is a powerful, powerful closing statement for time for an appointment, especially for outside salespeople. All I want to do is schedule a few minutes with you so I can just learn about you and your business.
Let's take an offshoot of that. Mr. Jones, while we've been on the phone, I've checked out your website, and there's a couple of things about it that I don't understand, and I was wondering if I could come by and talk to you about them.
Sure.
So I want you to understand that it's not about one question that's going to make it. It's about your demeanor. It's about your ability to dialogue. It's about you not sounding desperate. It's about you sounding like you're friendly. And if you can do all of those things in a short space of time, you're going to win.
So a pretty simple thing, if I could just paraphrase,
sure.
Confidence and enthusiasm. All you're doing on a prospecting call is transferring your emotion to the other person. And the two most important emotions in prospecting are confidence and enthusiasm.
Yep.
They believe that you're supposed to be there, and you're friendly and you're nice and you're kind and you're someone that they want to learn about. I also think there's language involved. So I think that when you say things like, I want to talk to you, I always teach salespeople, don't say talk, because that sends a subconscious message to the prospect's brain that you're going to sit there and pitch them, and nobody wants to be pitched. So, but if I say I want to learn about you, I want to find out if there's a fit. And we were talking earlier about some story we were telling, but the takeaway, like I took this away. I think we're talking about book publishing.
Yeah, yeah.
It's really powerful. So if I say, I don't know if we'll be a good fit, but I wanted to learn about you to see if we might, that's a takeaway.
I also have used the tactic of, I have a couple of ideas that I want to share with you. And people are always interested in an idea. And I'm a face-to-face guy. People go, well, what are they? I go, look, I'm a face-to-face guy. We don't have to meet in your office. We can meet for coffee. But if you like them, great. And if you don't like them, throw me the hell out. They cost you nothing but a little bit of time.
And if you got a couple of ideas that their competitors are using,
yeah,
they're even more interested.
Oh, yeah. I don't know how to do this without being specific about it, but I talked to a gift store sales force that went in and sold one specific item, new item every month, same milk route of gift stores. And they go in and they had to say why this month's little thing was better than last month's little thing. And oh, by the way, you need to take 12 dozen of them. Okay. So I said, we're stopping that. We're not going to do that anymore. We're going to become experts. You got 50 people on your route? Okay, great. You're going to walk in and you're going to say, what was the best-selling item in your store this month? And they'll know what it is. And I'll say, great. Where was that located? Could you show me where that was located? Okay. Now I have the best-selling item and where it was located. After 10 of those, and I have my spreadsheet going, now I know where the 10 best items are and where they were located. After 50, after a month, I'm now a maven. After 6 months, I'm a world-class expert at what was the best-selling item, where was it located. And I can walk into a gift shop now and go, you want to know what the best 500 items were in a gift? Yeah, I want to know. You want to know where they were located? Hell yeah, I want to know. And now it's like, oh, by the way, I got this.
That's something we call the pull strategy. And what you're doing basically is you're becoming an expert so that they pull you in.
Mm-hmm.
And that shop owner gives you a seat at their strategic table.
Bingo.
And then you're able then to shape their buying decisions because they see you as a valued resource. And this, I think, is—
That's correct. So I don't call it pull. I call it value.
It's value. But this is important because there's a whole lot of people. I went to a conference. I was speaking to a lot of salespeople, and they had these badges they hand out to everybody that said, we add value. And my message is this. Here's the deal. You can't add value unless you are valuable.
Correct.
And the way you become valuable is exactly what you just said. You actually go out there and invest the time to learn how to help your customers and clients build their business and be better at what they do.
I don't add value. I give value. And adding value leaves a perception of you have to buy from me to get the value. That's cute. Or they call it value add. Either way, it's incorrect. I'm value first. I give value first. And that way the other person wants to, you know, where are the 50 best things? I want to know. Where were they located? I want to know. Now that's value.
Well, that's tapping into the law of reciprocity. If I do something nice to you, then you'll want to do something back nice to me.
Without asking. I don't have to ask.
But this is what's important because salespeople mistake this, what you're saying. And I love what you said. Adding value means you got to buy from me. It's a quid pro quo.
Mm-hmm.
And when you approach any relationship with a quid pro quo mindset is basically premeditated resentment. And as a salesperson,
exactly.
Yeah, that impact.
I feel like I owe you. Yeah.
Well, that begins to impact your confidence, your enthusiasm when you have to go to ask the next person, and you become cynical because you don't feel like you're getting back. Recognizing that constantly giving value without asking is actually making, we'll call it karma. My team calls it the sales gods, but it gets the sales gods working for you.
I want to throw another thing at you. Quid pro quo means I'm going to give you this for that. And there's an expectation.
Yes.
Let's go to Britain for a moment. Value first is just quid. And quid for the uninformed is British for money. It's 60 quid is 60 pounds.
That's right.
And that's where the real value is. That's where the real process comes in. I want to give value and you will give me money. If I'm giving, you will give.
Absolutely.
If I'm asking for this, for that, you may not. Then you start to measure. And the guy that measures totally loses.
Absolutely. But if when you're giving and your customers see you, and this is especially true for account managers, people who, like you said, I've got a group of the businesses that I manage all the time. The more I'm giving, the more I give, the more I give, the more that person sees me as an integral part of their business. And they ask me my opinion. They'll call you up. You've got clients who call you up and say, Jeffrey, what should we do? And it's when you get asked that question, at that moment, you have the ability to shape what their future buying decisions mm-hmm. are going to look like.
I agree. Okay, now, I want to end this for 1 second. And this has been a very fruitful conversation, and we're going to have a lot of these. Cold calling is not the right nomenclature. The right nomenclature is learning how to sell like a master. And the only way that you can do that is practice doing fundamental things like engaging people that don't know you very well, finding some common ground, offering some kind of value, giving some kind of idea, asking the right kind of question, and putting yourself in a position where you are perceived as someone who is safe, who is confident in what they do, who's got the moxie to ask for it, and then go for it. I'm creating that atmosphere where the people want to buy. And that's what value does in any kind of cold call or any kind of prospecting call. But the bottom line is, what's the outcome? Who are you going to become as a result of doing this 100 things that you don't want to do? Baby, do them. And when you do them, get good at them and love it. Because in the end, what's going to happen is people are going to give you their money. That's the cool part. Jeb, thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the Sell or Die podcast. Tell your friends, your coworkers.
Wait a second, that sounds kind of scripted.
It's supposed to, I thought, no?
Oh.
Just is it not supposed to sound scripted?
Say it from your heart.
Thanks for listening to our Sell or Die podcast. Please tell your friends, your coworkers, everyone
tell
you know.
Both your friends.
Yeah, both of them. To subscribe to us on iTunes. And while you're at it, give us a 5-star review.
If you like this podcast, if you like me, if you like Jen, if you like both of us, you might want to learn more about our philosophies and our strategies. And the best way to do that is you go to salesinanewyorkminute.com to find out more about Jennifer, and you go to gittimer.com to find out more about me. But jeffreygittimer.com/gold will get you to my webinar series, and that's what I think we should emphasize for this program right now, because that is what will bring you, the listener, to more gold or get new knowledge about how to lighten your load with respect to achieving your goal. And that I have a bunch of tips, a bunch of ideas, a bunch of strategies that will get you to the decision maker faster and get them to make a better decision for you, regardless of price. Price is the biggest bullshit objection in sales, and what it means is the customer hasn't perceived enough value in you to be able to pull the trigger, because somebody buys a Mercedes-Benz and then idiots buy a Honda.
Hey, I have a Honda.
Well, it's well, okay, some smart people buy Hondas, but it's because they're cheap bastards.
I'm signed up for Gittimer Gold, and I think everyone who's listening should check it out at least. It's jeffreygittimer.com/gold. And also check out on my website. I have 7 videos for $7. You can go to salesinanewyorkminute.com/747, just the numbers, 747. I want to give a special thanks to our producer, Doug Branson.
Yep. You're welcome.
Yeah, thank you. Yep. And our audio operator, Chris Hill. And from all of us here at Sell or Die.
Oh, that's my cue.
That's you, baby.
And from all of us here at Sell or Die.
Get out there and sell until your ass falls off.